Oh, the golden voice there, the golden tonsils of Stephen Cummings, formerly, of course, of the sports, the Polacco brothers before that, but a stellar solo career. Just one of the singer-songwriters who my next guest spoke to when she put together her incredible book, Songwriters Speak. That is my next guest. She is my next guest. Coming up, Debbie Kruger.
You're listening to ABC Radio.
Now, in the very first collection in 2005 of in-depth interviews with Australian and New Zealand songwriters, Songwriters Speak by Debbie Kruger, it was published to great acclaim. It was one of the very first books to dig deeply into the nuts and the bolts of songwriters. It became a sought-after reference work for music writers, fans, and musicians. Now, the good news is, it's being reprinted. It has been reprinted. And the really good news is I have Debbie Kruger on the line to chat with you. Hello, Debbie.
Oh, my God, what an amazing introduction. I just can't live up to that.
Oh, yes, you can. And I tell you what, that book is somewhere in my attic, and your publisher very kindly sent me a PDF, and I just have been immersing myself over the last couple of days in your wonderful work. Debbie, tell us about how this book came about and why it's come out again.
Oh, well, it's come out again because it had been out of print for too long, and I was technologically challenged about getting it back out there because, as you know, it's a huge work. And then finally I just made it happen. So it had come out, in 2005 after 4 years' work of travelling to interview these iconic songwriters from Australia and New Zealand. And it was such a big endeavour that when it was over, I kind of put it aside, and it just kept keeping on, and people loved it, and then they couldn't get it anymore because it sold out. And the publisher originally who published it decided to close up their business for various reasons. And it was really hard to get it back out there. So it sat languishing for 15 years out of print. And I was going on eBay buying old copies of the book. I would love to tell you a story about your previous guest about regifting.
Oh, yeah.
I even bought one that I had gifted to somebody.
No.
And, quite a well-known songwriter in LA, actually. And I inscribed it to him. And it showed up on Amazon as a used book, and the seller said, I said, look, I'm the writer, I want to buy it. And he said, it's inscribed. I said, oh, can you send me a copy, a photo?
A photo. Of
and it's like, to Ned, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
that was you.
Well, that was my friend, Ned, whom I had inscribed it to and given it to as a gift. And he'd obviously tossed it out.
Oh.
But anyway, that's a whole other story about
Debbie, I think we can safely say that someone grabbed it when Ned wasn't watching and he was horrified to think that it had gone. Debbie Kruger, the list of artists that the list of people, your songwriters you've spoken to is really quite remarkable. I mentioned a few before. I could throw in Casey Chambers. I could throw in Daniel Johns, Nick Cave, Neil Finn. I want to start though with a couple of absolute champions of our industry, Harry Vander and George Young. Tell us about interviewing those two gentlemen.
I think to this day the most important songwriters to have emerged from Australia.
Yeah.
Because the effects of what they've done, I mean, even now, Love Is in the Air, you know, internationally known. Friday on My Mind, still considered possibly the greatest Australian song ever written. My favourite, Evie Parts 1, 2 and 3, sung by Stevie Wright. I interviewed them separately because they were living and existing separately. Harry was here in Sydney, and George had retired and was living in Europe, and so we did that remotely. But their fondness for each other, and yet their very sort of almost cavalier attitude to the contributions that they'd made, and their sort of throwaway attitude. Yeah, you know, Evie, Harry would say, yeah, it's all right. I mean, I didn't really like the middle section, but you know, the first and the third ones, yeah, a bad song, Evie. And that as producers as well as songwriters, I was always interested in songwriters who produced as well.
Yes.
Because Steve Kittner, for example, who wrote Let's Get Physical for Olivia Newton-John, he considered himself a record writer rather than just a songwriter. He would hear the whole song in his head. And I think Vander and Young were pioneers of that, of being songwriters who were writing for a particular artist, whether it was Stevie Wright, John Paul Young, William Shakespeare,
yes,
if you remember, and could hear the production, you know, in the lyrics and in the melody while they were writing. Yeah, legends.
Oh,
and
complete.
We've lost George now.
I know. I know. There are quite a few artists and songwriters who are no longer with us. The great thing about Vander and Young, and of course teaming up with Stevie Wright, they could put together not just a short pop song, but they could put together a sprawling epic. And I think we might just go into just a tiny bit of one of those epics, and I speak of Evie. Just the beginning of what was a real epic, wasn't it? I wonder if really Australia had produced many songs like that, Debbie.
Well, that is the longest song, because it runs at like 11 minutes or so between the three parts, to have ever hit number one anywhere in the world. It's a longer song than Bohemian Rhapsody. It is the longest.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not as well known overseas. And I feel really sorry for anyone that grew up and didn't know Evie Parts 1, 2 and 3.
Yeah.
It's my favourite Australian song. And there's a legendary performance that Stevie Wright did on the steps of the Sydney Opera House.
Yes.
On November 4th, 1979, the 2SM, Concert of the Decade. And that performance of Evie Parts 1, 2 and 3 is considered by many to be the greatest live performance by any Australian artist of all time.
Yep.
And I stand by that.
Oh, yeah. It's available on YouTube, and I think people watching it will realise that Stevie Wright, he'd had some rough years, but he came back, and often through the help and the tutelage and the guidance of Harry Vander and George Young. My guest is Debbie Kruger. Her book, her wonderful book that came out many, many years ago, really, Songwriters Speak, has been re-released. Deb, we're going to clash with a little 1:30 moment where we have to sort of change gears, but we'll keep going with you after that. But let's talk for a moment about perhaps an older writer, a man who had international success, and I know he's one of your favourites too, John Farrar.
Oh, yeah, and a Melbourne
yes.
songwriter, and very important in those early years of music making in the Melbourne scene, played on The Real Thing, amongst other songs, and then went over to London, worked with Olivia Newton-John there, and then they all moved over to the US. Very self-effacing, very shy about celebrating himself, and yet I think one of the genius songwriters this country has ever produced. And I would say to him, you wrote "You're the One That I Want," full stop. That's it. Do you understand? It is not the most profound song of all time. It does not have the deepest lyrics, but I defy anyone to hear that song and not stop in their tracks, be transported to that magical time of watching Greece and that finale scene and the joy and the love in that 2.5 minute song. Oh, that's what songs need to do. They don't just need to be Bob Dylan-esque, you know, and tell you what the state of the world. They can just be a few minutes of sheer joy.
Sheer and utter bliss. I toyed with letting the audience hear a little bit of that one, but you twisted my arm and said, what about we hear a little bit of A Little More Love? Give us the 20-second intro to this one, Debbie, and I'll play a little bit.
Oh, this was from Olivia's Totally Hot album when she was wearing, you know, lycra and looking sexy. And John told me he was very inspired by Barry Gibb and the sound of the Bee Gees when he wrote A Little More Love for Olivia.
Oh, thank you. Livy, the gorgeous Olivia Newton-John, and a John Farrar song called A Little More Love. You're on the ABC. You're with Brian Nankervis, just emceeing for today, and my guest who's agreed to just hold over this little odd moment we have at 1:30 is Debbie Kruger, author of Songwriters Speak, and just before you know it, we'll be back with a couple more songs and stories.
Australian Open tennis returns.
Listen big on the ABC Listen app. You're listening to ABC Radio.
And you're with Brian Nankervis midway through a chat with Debbie Kruger. Debbie has republished, or her publishing company has put it out again. It's a book called Songwriters Speak, first published in 2005, arguably the first collection of in-depth interviews with Australian and New Zealand songwriters. Debbie, I'm just wondering about the process. Say you contact Tim Finn or his management, and an interview is set up. What do you do? Do you chat for a while? Do you have hard and fast questions? What's your process?
Yeah, the process was one at a time, getting the okay to do the interview, setting it up, doing the research, because not all of the songwriters had I been a fan of. You know, there were some Little River Band, Sherbet, for instance, songs. John Farrar's Olivia Newton-John songs, where I knew the songs inside out off by heart. I knew what I wanted to ask. And then there were others who I respected from afar but had just not been familiar enough with their music. Nick Cave, guys from Midnight Oil. And so I would sit down and I would spend weeks listening chronologically to everything that they'd written and recorded. And then I would go and see them wherever. For Nick Cave, I went and saw him in his home in England, where he was living then. And I would have whatever time they'd allocated, and usually a lot longer. So yes. I had usually three hours was the average. Sometimes it was a lot longer. Occasionally it was only an hour or two. And I would go through my questions, and I obviously would listen to those answers and see if any other questions came from those. And very much a part of an anthology, if you like, although these were all purposefully done for this book. A collection of interviews like this is—it's as much about the art of interview as it is about the subjects. And you would know this: you interview people, and there's a skill to how you ask a question, and how you listen to the answer, and what you do with that answer.
And also, Debbie, I have to say, in my experience, songwriters, once they know that the interviewer is very well read, very well prepared, and also interested in the construction of a song, they will enjoy that, because to many of them, songwriting is an absolute thrill. There's a great quote from Nick Cave where he says, "The whole thing with writing and making music is that when I'm in the moment with it, I feel like a different person, like what I'm doing is the greatest thing that not only I've done, but that has ever been done." How was your experience with Nick? Because, you know, he's a million miles from John Farrar, although maybe not.
Maybe not. I think he's a million miles from Little River Band.
Yes.
Or Sherbet.
Yeah.
But, and I was very candid with him. I said, you know, I don't come here to sit at your feet. I haven't been worshipping you for 20 years. I wasn't a fan, and I've studied you. And he was like, oh, okay, that's cool. That's interesting. He wanted to do the interview because he understood this kind of interviewing, whereas his assistant at the time did everything in her power to dissuade me and kept telling me he was unavailable. And then even then it was, you can go down there if you want, you can have 1 hour. And Nick said to me, oh, I always wanted to do this. And you know, we had three fantastic hours. Somebody like Nick Cave, all these years on, has been through so much in his life, has done so much more work since then. It'd be fascinating to talk to him again. But now when people interview him, the center of those interviews is about grief and how grief has affected his work. And what's really interesting when I look back on my Nick Cave interview is that we were talking about a particular song, The Sorrowful Wife. And I had met his wife, Susie, because I'd gone to their house and she'd answered the door. And she had the little twin sons there at her knees, and they were very small. And I said, Nick, where did this idea of a sorrowful wife come from? I met her. She seemed very chirpy to me. And he said, yes, but there is this sorrow underneath, which is one of the things that makes her beautiful to me. And now I think, wow, you know, all the sorrow that they have been through.
Yes.
Through so much loss. I wonder if he can even bear to hear that song, let alone play it anymore. Yes. I don't know. I saw him perform in LA just a couple of months ago, and it was an extraordinary experience to see him again after so long. But yes, when I rang James Rain, whom I did not know, I had his number and I just called him. And I said, I explained what I was doing and that I'd like to come down to Melbourne and see him. And he agreed. And then at the end of the conversation, he said, thank you for considering me. And I got that a lot. Chrissy Amphlett, at the end of our interview, she said, thank you. You know, all these years, people have thought of me as this rock chick. And the thing that I am most proud of is my work as a songwriter. Mark Seymour said to me at the end of the interview, you ask really good questions. And, you know, Mark Seymour, I didn't know beforehand, but I figured he probably wasn't the easiest guy to please.
Well,
and, guys from the Oils who've since become mates of mine, and Rob Hurst looked at me and he pointed his finger at me and he said, you ask really good questions. And that to me is the greatest compliment and the greatest gratification, that I could sit down with the great Archie Roach. And a lot of the time he would talk to me with his eyes closed, because he was really contemplating how he wanted to answer these questions and going deep into the pain that was behind those songs that he wrote about being part of that stolen generation. No, these moments stay with me forever, Brian.
Of course. All these artists and more are in Debbie Kruger's book. It's called Songwriters Speak. It's just been re-released. How can listeners get their hands upon a copy?
The best way is to go to the website, songwriterspeak.com, and go to the buy page, and there are a whole list of options of how you can get this book.
Excellent.
You can go into your bookstore and ask them to order it, because it's not like on every shelf of every bookstore. But it's very much available online, and there is an ebook as well.
All right. Let's go out with one of your favourites. I speak of Sherbet, and the song is Cassandra. Just a 30-second intro from you, Debbie Kruger, for this one.
You know, I've been working for more than 3 years on a book about Sherbet. That's my next book. And this was the song back in 1973 that made me stop in my tracks and go, that's Australian and that's beautiful, and really pay attention to where a song took me emotionally and musically. It's gorgeous. Garth Porter, Clive Shakespeare, and Clive's then wife's lover, Shakespeare. They wrote this song.
Good on you, Debbie. Lovely to chat. You take care.
You too.